Red Eyes members, thank you very much for joining us. We are continuing our conversation with Aaron Kaplan. We're talking about his book, Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion. And basically, to just do a quick recap here, we've been talking about the race of Nephilim or Anunnaki coming to Earth. And we've talked about a war, pretty much, in Antarctica, back when the time of Admiral Byrd was there with Operation High Jump and whatnot. And we're just leading this into the idea or possibility then that much in the Star Trek movie, Voyage Home, where we have, when the gods, so to speak, return to the planet, they expect a certain, I guess, either race or people to be here, but that might not be the possibility. And Aaron, just before we stopped for the first hour, you were getting into the idea of technology and weaponry, primarily the Ark of the Covenant and Spear of Destiny. So maybe you can take it from there and kind of tie all these loose threads or ends together for us.
Right. Now, I mentioned the Ark of the Covenant. Now, again, for the listeners, just understand one thing. I'm going to mention the name of God, of Moses, the Ark of the Covenant. I'm using the name Bible as a history book, as a scientific book, not religious. You just stay with me. Now, the Ark of the Covenant. I believe that the Ark of the Covenant and the rod that Moses used are indeed one form of weapon that described in the Sumerian text called the Spear of Destiny and Tablet of Destinies. It's a very, very powerful weapon, and I'll tell you why. Not what you heard in the book called the Bible of doing magic tricks in a Pharaoh's palace with the snakes or parting the Red Sea. I'm going to explain to you why, because I discovered that it's very possible that the book of Genesis is missing a chapter, a very important chapter. Mm-hmm. And I came up on it, not by accident, but connecting the correct dots. Now, Moses, if you remember, when he was born, there was a ruling in the Bible that Pharaoh said to kill all the Hebrew babies who were born male. Moses' sister was called Miriam. She put him in a little basket on the Nile River to save his life, hoping somebody would find him. Well, that area of the Nile River is a very special area. Now, remember, the Nile River is very unique. It flows from south to north. Many people don't know that. Most world rivers flow from north to south. Now, the pyramids and the Pharaoh's palaces on a very large water area, only a few miles from the Mediterranean Sea. So anything that's caught in a stream in the center of the river will float right out to the ocean and get swept away. However, there's a very small area around the Giza pyramids and the Pharaoh's palace that in the Hebrew Bible, it's called Me Ayahor, which is the waters of the Yahor. It's a very unique name. Mm-hmm. It's a very unique name. So Miriam, his sister, placed him in a little basket right at the water of the Yahor, very close to the Pharaoh's palaces. And of course, one of the daughters of the Pharaohs found him floating in a basket, took him in. Now remember the name again. The Yahor is very critical. Very critical.
Mm, gotcha.
He took him in. When Moses became 40 years old, allegedly killed an Egyptian guard. But you have to remember that by then Moses was already a very high-ranking officer in Egypt. Very high-ranking. Some experts say that it may have been even a pharaoh. We don't know. But he killed an Egyptian guard. So he escaped to the Midian Desert in Africa. And he found a job as a sheepherder with some local priests. Now, here's what happened. One of his early days, attending the sheep, he was a sheep herder, he came upon what we know as a burning bush. And a voice came from inside a bush, supposedly God's voice, big G, little G, whichever you believe. And God spoke to him for a few minutes and said, I knew your forefathers, like I mentioned earlier. I know Abraham, Jacob, and Isaac. Okay, now why did he say that? What was the reason? God must have had something in mind. That means that he was watching Moses' race. I mean, how would he know suddenly that he was, all those names out of nowhere?
Mm-hmm.
He was watching them. They may have been abductees, or just watching them to guard a certain bloodline. Now remember, Moses spent also 40 years in the Midian Desert. He spent 40 years there. God introduced him to the magic rod, how to use it. It's in the Bible, the New Testament, the Old Testament. Now, he didn't teach him one day, or 3 days, or a few months. He taught him for 40 years how to use this magic rod. Now, the question is, why? Why? Meanwhile, if you pay attention to this, Moses marries the priest's daughter. The priest's daughter happens to be, she was not a white woman, she was a black woman. And he had a few children with them. Now, I believe that Moses was already married, but he married her anyway. He married a black woman. That's very important for the future. Remember the name. He married a black woman, and they were also from Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
It's very critical.
Mm-hmm.
Very important to what's coming. Keep it in the back of your head. So he marries her, and again, he's in training with God for 40 years with magic rod. Now, 40 years later, God tells Moses, I'm going to help you, and I'm going to help you to bring the Israelites out of Egypt. Just like this. Out of nowhere. The question, why? The question is why. So Moses settles up his whatever he had, camel, donkey, horse, and he's way down back to Egypt where he came from originally. He comes down there with his magic rods, and we all know the magic tricks that he performed in the court of the Pharaoh with snakes, the big snake eating the little snake, and so forth and so forth. But then came the big tricks. We heard of a river turning to blood, and locusts coming down, and animals, and so forth and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, here's what I believe really happened. You have to listen to this, it can blow your mind.
Go ahead.
The Ark of the Covenant is mentioned in the Bible of having certain measurements. I'm not going to say what they are, too complicated. The width and the height and the length. The Bible also mentions, some other measurements, but not exact. When scientists broke into the Giza Pyramid, the large pyramid, the King Chamber, they found a coffer there in the King Chamber. A black rock coffer. What's made of, nobody really knows. Black marble mixed. It's a black coffer with the exact size measurements of the Ark of the Covenant. That's proven already.
That's the Ark of the Contract, right? The Egyptians had a similar thing.
Well, inside the Giza Pyramid, there are a few chambers. One chamber is the King Chamber. In the chamber on the floor, or a few feet of the floor, there's a coffer, like a coffin, made of black marble. There's an opening in the coffer. That opening is like a male to female fit, like one triangle fits inside another triangle. It fits exactly to the size of the Ark of the Covenant that's described in the Bible. The exact size. Now, if you remember a few years ago, some delegation went to Egypt with the courtesy of Dr. Zahi Hawass,
mm-hmm.
the famous Egyptian archaeologist was in charge of all the pyramids and all the findings. He allowed a team of archaeologists entered the Giza Pyramid with a little Radio Shack tractor. Do you remember? A little with chains. We took pictures of the side of the pyramid or the shafts with a little TV camera.
Yeah, exactly. They were going up the to discover the Gantam Brink's door, I think they call it afterwards, right?
That's correct. Yes. That's correct.
Yes.
And every time the little vehicle went up a few feet, we found copper plugs in the wall.
Yeah, that's right.
Copper.
That's right.
Nobody can figure out what they were doing there. But every time the little vehicle went to one shaft, another shaft, copper plugs. Very similar to conduits. Very similar. Now, in the King Chamber, right next to the copper opening that I mentioned earlier, they also discovered the same copper plugs in the wall. They look just like conduits for plugs they use today, electric plug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For cars. Another team came by a couple of years later and took X-rays of the walls, and guess what they found out? There are gigantic copper tubings embedded inside those walls. We'll go from the King Chamber, right up the shafts, straight to the tip of the pyramid. Now, in the old days, a story was floating around. There were rumors that the pyramid had a golden tip.
Yeah.
Golden plates. And the rumor was the thieves stole them for the value. Well, apparently not. Apparently, these golden plates, as far as the pyramid is concerned, is a part of either a weapon system that could be used as a weapon system or a defense system for our planet. But it's used in conjunction with the Ark of the Covenant and the Magic Rod.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm going to explain to you how. What happens was, Moses, at a time when he came to Egypt, they performed the little tricks with the snakes, never heard of the Ark of the Covenant. All he knew, he had in his hand a rod that he was training with for 40 years in the Midian Desert with the help of God.
Right. Gotcha.
Okay. Then we hear of the waters. Suddenly, after he did all the snake tricks and all, the Pharaoh refused to release the Israelites. So Moses came to God, not God. But what do I do? So God asked him, don't worry. It's going to be okay. So what happened next? We hear smoke, thunder, lightning, blood in the water, frogs, boils, hail, and so forth.
All kinds of mayhem. Yeah, that's right.
Right. Let me ask you a question. Are you familiar with the Jewish holiday of Passover?
The Passover? Yeah, a little bit. I don't know too much about it, but I've heard about it. Yeah.
Right. In the first day of celebration, the first evening, the rabbi sits at the table and holds a glass of wine and he pours 10 drops to plates, and he repeats what happened in Egypt. He says blood, fraud, lies, flies, disease, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
As a remembrance of the Israelites leaving Egypt. Now, he says a blessing in 8-9 steps. And the steps are blood, fraud, lies, flies, disease, livestock, boils, hail, locusts, and feet of the darkness.
Okay.
Now, it took me a long time to think about it. But here's what I concluded. And again, you have to hear this. The missing gold tips on the top of the pyramid were removed by whoever to be kept again and to be used in another 3,600 years from that date, which means, in my calendar, this coming December 21st, 2012.
Okay, yeah.
Here's what I think happened. When Moses came to Egypt, to the Pharaoh, when he did those magic tricks and the court, there was already, at that time, there was already installed by a previous leader from the same bloodline. I have no idea who this person is. His name could have been Harry, Jacob, Larry, Aaron, whatever. But a previous leader of some type who installed another Akaba cabinet that was built 3,000, 6,000 years before him when the Bureau came around. That Akaba covenant is a super, super powerhouse. With the aliens' knowledge, they can convert enormous amounts of energy, apparently from another dimension, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whether it's electrical, nuclear, whatever. An enormous amount of power to any direction they want to. So apparently what happened, there was an Ark of the Covenant already existing there in the coffer. Installed a few months earlier or a few years earlier and guarded very carefully by guards, not touched. Now, here we go. We'll make a little break in time. Let's go 40 years later. After Moses took the Israelites out of Egypt, and they came to the country of Canaan, God told them, you cannot enter. You're punished. Why couldn't Moses enter Canaan? The people starving in the desert, they needed water, and so forth, and so forth, and so forth. God then told Moses, take your magic rod, go to a certain area that I'll show you, and hit the ground with your magic cane, and say the same blessing that you said by the Yaor. Remember the word Yaor?
Yep, indeed.
You mentioned earlier?
Yes.
It's a very certain area of water around the palace, right next to the pyramid. It didn't say the Nile River. It didn't say the Red Sea. Now, here's the kicker. The Old Testament says, may I your oar. The New Testament says, the river. Something was altered here.
Yeah.
The Old Testament says, the oar. The New Testament says, river. When I heard the word, the oar, something clicked in my head. What apparently happened is this. Moses performed a certain miracle, a big one. Otherwise, God wouldn't refer to it. Because remember, Moses needed water for his people in the desert. They marched through the desert 40 years. They were fed manna by some UFOs, flying saucers, whatever.
Right.
But came to a point where they needed water.
Mm-hmm.
So God told them, do the same thing to get water out of the ground, the same thing, the same miracle, the same way as you performed 40 years ago at the Yaor. Now, what could Moses have done at the Yaor? I'll tell you. When he was at the king's palace, at the Pharaoh's palaces, apparently at that time, the golden tip on the pyramid, everything was in place. The golden tip, the Ark of the Covenant, everything else. But the orders of God, now at the same instant, when Moses was 80 years old, planet Nibiru came around. That's exactly 3,600 years ago, Henrik.
Right.
Planet Nibiru came around. Apparently it was coming too close to the Earth. Those 200 aliens, Nephilim, built a weapon. And they also built a pyramid for that reason only.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Remember, the pyramid is built on the center of the Earth. I'm not going to give you numbers. It's too complicated. The pyramid is built at the center of the mess of the Earth.
Yeah, that's right.
If you were a tow truck driver and you saw a car abandoned on the road, what would you do? You take a chain from a truck and you hook it up to the strongest part of the car, correct?
Right.
And lift the car out of the hole, out of the ground, and to safety.
Sure.
So if you wanted to rescue the Earth, pull it away, by a chain or by hook, you would place the hook in the strongest part of the earth, which is exactly what the pyramid of Giza is built.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right.
So if you want to push our planet, theoretically, you know, by force or push another planet away from us, you would use that location. And that's what a pyramid is for. Not for stargazing stories, not to for anything else. It's built for a specific purpose, to be used every 3,600 years. And here's what happened. That pyramid now is fully equipped with the Ark of the Covenant inside, not the one that Moses received later on, but an older one that was installed by a previous messenger, just like Moses. So the Ark of the Covenant was there. Moses came to the pyramid, swung his magic cane, with a certain code, whatever he used, and that activated the Ark of the Covenant.
Inside the pyramid.
The Ark of the Covenant, that's correct. The Ark of the Covenant became activated. What did it do? It sucked up huge amounts of water from the Nile River. Those days, the water level was right at the pyramid or a little above that. They found water basins there, boat basins. That means there was lots of water there. It sucked water out right from the bottom of the Nile River to opening the bottom of the pyramid. And that water was used as a cooling system for the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That Ark of the Covenant must have gotten red hot. Imagine the energy that it had to bring in from wherever to create a beam at the top of the pyramid from the golden tip. That's like a science fiction movie, identical.
Mm-hmm.
To create the beam, to push either Nibiru away from us with a slight nudge, or push us away from Nibiru.
Right.
With a slight nudge. Apparently it worked. That was the catastrophe happened at a time that the aliens didn't expect.
Yeah.
For the floods to occur, and so forth and so forth.
What you're saying here is that basically the Giza pyramid is a big device that works in conjunction with other things like the Ark of the Covenant, and it needs a phrase to activate it, or however that actually works. And this helped to push either us away from Nibiru or the Nibiru away from us in that sense. And this is going to happen again. Is that what you're saying?
It's going to happen again, except one little problem, which I'll mention.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that certain observatories in the world and certain satellites like IRIS are claiming that this time planet Nibiru is coming at us not from the far side of the sun, but from the near side of the sun. That's pretty bad. That means that we're going to get a triple pass of Nibiru coming down and going away.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, Nibiru comes around from the far side of the sun, comes next to us and just goes its way back home. But if we get a double dose, that's pretty bad. So those aliens right now are very, very fearful of a double dose of the path of the planets. Now, let's go back to Moses. After he performed what he had to do, the Ark of the Covenant got so hot that it's sucking. You have to remember, when you're sucking water from a river, you're sucking everything. Fish, frogs, livestock, whatever.
Yeah.
The water became bloody. Very simple.
Right.
The river became bloody. Now, what happens to the frogs on shore when the water gets contaminated with blood and dead livestock?
Yeah.
Frogs live in very clean water. Those frogs will escape as fast as they can offshore, correct?
Right.
They will escape. Now we hear frogs. What comes after frogs? Lice and flies. If all the blood is stew in the water, dead meat, it'll attract lots of flies.
So what you're saying here, Aaron, is that the ritual that is performed during Passover is as a recount, basically, of this story, correct?
Well, it's a recount of what they think happened.
Yeah.
But not of what really happened. It's the correct steps, but the wrong reason. They think it was magic that Moses turned the water to blood and frogs and lice and so forth. What allegedly they may not realize, or the world doesn't realize, or any religion, of what really may have happened that day or that week.
Sure.
And of course, at the end, the last step, when the Ark of the Covenant was working full blast, like a racing engine, to push away the planet, it created smoke in the skies, hail, very similar to an electrical storm.
Sure.
That's exactly the steps the Bible tells you. I mean, it couldn't be any better. Oh, it sounds phenomenal, but if you think about it, it's exactly what happened. Identical. So what happened afterwards? The Pharaoh got scared. Okay, Israelites, you can leave. Go on your way. So they left. And, of course, on the way to the desert, Moses stopped again at Mount Sinai, like God told him to do. And what did God give him? God gave him another Ark of the Covenant. I'm saying another because I know, I think that's what it is, but Moses didn't know at the time. As far as Moses was concerned, he got the first or the original Ark of the Covenant. No. He got another one for safekeeping for the same people, the same bloodline, for safekeeping for the next 3,600 years.
Right, right. So that's where the question ends up now, obviously, then, if that's the conclusion that you come to, that this is what has happened in the past, and that if this potentially is going to happen again in the future, where is all of this, and primarily where is the golden tip of the pyramid, because that's also gone, right?
I'll tell you right now. I know exactly where it is. And the first time ever you're going to hear this on your show. If you remember earlier, I told you that Moses married a black woman from Ethiopia.
Indeed, yes.
In the Midian Desert.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, like I said, those aliens do not do things by coincidences. They don't do things by accident. They work on very long-term plans.
Yes.
They have to. Remember, they control humanity. They control events. So he married a black woman from Ethiopia. Okay. Now here comes the clincher. Do we remember King David and King Solomon?
Yeah.
Of course. King David, before he died, told his son Solomon to build a new temple. But inside the temple, King David told his son Solomon not to forget, build a remembrance, a statue, so forth, to the friends that helped them during the wars. And who were the friends? He mentions two names, the cherubim and the offering, the angels.
Mm-hmm.
Cherubim and the offering. To me, the cherubim and the offering, and one more name, seraphim, there were seraphim, are the same group of the Nephilim. They're comprised of three different groups.
Yeah.
And I'll explain later what they are. Okay, but he also, one more thing happened. Who did King Solomon run around with? It was a black woman from Ethiopia.
Sheba,
correct. Solomon, the big harem of women, many of them. But one woman favored the most, Sheba. Again, where she's from? A black woman from Ethiopia.
Yes.
A few things by accident, I'm afraid not. Those gods work in mysterious ways, okay?
Sure.
So we have Moses running around with a black woman from the desert. Fine match. And now we have King Solomon favoring another black woman from Ethiopia, okay?
Right.
could probably guess the rest, but I'll tell you.
Go ahead. I'll tell you. Go ahead.
When Moses finished the temple, which is called the Mishkan, because God told Moses to build what's called the Mishkan, the house of the covenant, to store the covenant. Those instructions went down to King Solomon. And he built a temple to store the Ark of the Covenant, which contained the rod and the tablets and some other goodies inside. And it was stored there for quite a few years until the country was conquered by the Romans or whatever it was at the time.
Yeah.
Now, God trusted this line of people, which was called Am Segula. Again, not Jewish or any religion. It's a unique name because of the bloodline. He trusted them to safeguard the Ark of the Covenant, who is only one around now. There's only one left, which Moses got. He trusted that nation to guard it with their lives, and they did. It was sent to Ethiopia. I don't know exactly when, where, but I can tell you what happened to it. Do you remember Operation Solomon?
No, I'm not familiar with that. Tell us briefly about it.
Okay. Operation Solomon is a so-called military operation, civilian military, that Israel performed between May 24th and 25th of 1991.
Mm-hmm.
What Israel did is rescue roughly 15,000 Ethiopian Jews that were flown from Ethiopia to Israel in about 34 LL jumbo jets and some Hercules 130s to Israel, from Ethiopia.
Ah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah. Interesting.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, I'm not a betting man. I do go to a casino once in a while, but I bet a few pennies. I'm not a betting man, but I'll put $5. Then one of those jets, one of those planes, the Ark of the Covenant and the Magic Rod found its way to Israel in 1991.
So it was flown out from the speculation that it was stored in Ethiopia, and at the current date it is in Israel then. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Right.
And if Israel got it back in 1991, I'll put another $5 wager that they know exactly how to use it. And I mean exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It may have already been used for a few things. It may have. Allegedly, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But if they have it in their hands right now, I'll assure you they know how to use it. And I'm going to make one more statement.
Mm.
The little fellow in Iran, what's his name?
Ahmadinejad.
Whatever his name is.
Ahmadinejad, yeah.
If Israel possesses the Ark of the Covenant, if they do, only allegedly, then he should be double careful. If they do. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, I know it sounds far-fetched, but it's a very distinct possibility to what I'm telling you. Like if I was a lawyer in court and trying to win a case, I'll give you all the possibilities. And for what I've discovered so far, it's a very distinct possibility. Because right now it's in their hands, probably fully operational, ready for whatever is to come.
And
that's my guess.
And how about the tip of the pyramid and the golden, the pyramidion, as they call it, was this flown out as well during Operation Solomon, do you think, or is that stored somewhere else?
That I couldn't tell you, but it may be stored somewhere else. That I do not know. It could be stored, some people make a statement, there are secret chambers in the pyramid, or the Sphinx, or in Iraq. Now.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Iraq. That's not a story. I don't believe personally, I do not believe that the main reason for going to Iraq was military. I mean, that's my opinion.
Yeah, sure.
I think our motives there are much, much further than that. One motive, I believe, is the French, with the help of the Iraqis or vice versa, somehow tried to activate certain things that were buried there.
Mm-hmm.
Things that may be called Agent Stargate, who knows what.
Sure.
All they were looking for, those tips of the pyramids. Yeah. Where this thing.
And so I just want to ask you here, considering what you all that you've said here, is so this is done or helped or aided or guided, whatever you want to call it, by a benevolent alien race that is trying to prevent the incoming Nibiru from destroying Earth? Or what is the motive here, so to speak, for all of these things that you've discussed?
There's no benevolent race. Here's the story. There's only one race, believe it or not. I'm not saying they're good or evil, but there's only one race that controls this galaxy. They're the Anunnaki.
Okay.
They own it.
All right.
Many races come and go. They come, they watch, you know, they go to trips, sightseeing trips here and there, picnic, whatever. They leave. But none of them performs medical experiments or abductions. None of them.
Okay.
They come, they watch, and they leave. They call the Stuanant Anunnakis here and their descendants, they call them the banished ones. They already know they cannot interfere with this planet. They cannot. Because apparently the Anunnaki are the most powerful force in this galaxy. If they do anything, it's over. So they come, they watch, and they leave.
Right.
Now, what's happening, this 200 Nephilim that are in prison here, all their descendants have to reinvent themselves. So what they're looking for now is one human being, you may call him a righteous person, like Noah or whatever. They're looking for one human being with pure DNA left over. As you know, for many years in Jewish community, you have modern Jews, Hasidim, and so forth. Those Hasidim are very similar to British royalty families.
Mm-hmm.
They intermarry among themselves. It's very possible that they're trying to keep some families, a certain bloodline, pure down the road. Maybe for that reason, I'm not sure.
All right, right.
It's possible. Possible, but I'm not sure.
And what is the reason for this bloodline? What is the properties of the genetic line here, so to speak? Is that because this one bloodline have the ability to interact with the pyramid and these devices, or why are they trying to keep this pure?
No. I mentioned originally there's a barrier around the Earth called the Gamma G barrier.
Mm-hmm.
The name I gave it.
Yeah.
Gamma G is nicknamed short for Gamma Gene Barrier. Those guys, again, are genetic experts. That barrier is built distinctly to locate those 200 Nephilim if they try to escape and incinerate them on the spot, destroy them.
Okay?
So what they're trying to do is find a pure human being, just like Noah, with a pure human blood. Not mixed with any alien DNA.
Yeah.
In other words, intermarriage. They're trying to find a pure human DNA that was never involved in any intermarriages, so they can use him or his or her blood to reduplicate their own DNA, so they can step into a spaceship, take off, go through the barrier, because they won't sense human DNA, pure human DNA.
Hmm.
You would only sense Nephilim DNA, even a slight mixture, it would sense it and destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why all those abductions, and it's also why lately you hear so many microbiologists dying.
Okay.
The reason why they're dying is not because they're working on a super weapon or virus. The reason why they're dying is whatever project they're working on, as soon as they realize what it is, and they open the mouth, it's over. What they're working on is try to find the correct DNA from any human, any race, any creed, that's pure human DNA. That's all they're trying to do in those laboratories.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else you discover, if you discover a cure to cancer or anything else, that's great. It's secondary. It's a secondary bonus. The whole mission is to discover pure human DNA before 2012 so that these aliens can rejuvenate themselves, reinvent themselves, and take off and go.
But so still, in a way here, what you're describing is that we, the human beings here on this planet, which you discussed then possibly have this mixed DNA and so forth, we're pretty much screwed in this scenario anyway, right? And it's only this the pure DNA that will be able to escape. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct, for more reasons than one. Do you know the country in South Africa? I don't mean the continent, like Katie Carrick once in an interview, but the country of South Africa?
Yeah.
What happened a few years ago when the white race, the white controlling race, abandoned South Africa and left because the UN told them to leave and leave the country to the minorities? You know what happened in South Africa? It became nothing. So I believe that those aliens right now are controlling the whole planet. That's called, unofficially, the New World Order, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Unofficially. I got a feeling that those aliens leave, it's basically over for us. Because who's going to take over whatever order we have? Yeah, we could find somebody, but how long would it take? It'll be total chaos. The only reason why they're keeping things intact right now, and believe me, they're keeping things intact to the last day where they can escape or they're going to perish. The minute they escape, they're going to leave us everything. In other words, they're going to leave us double zero because we cannot handle it on our own. Maybe we can, who knows?
I think we can. But that's I don't know.
Maybe
if we're left to our own devices, so to speak, I think that more good things will come out of this than the other way around, because now it's things aren't that great right now either, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, but at least you have certain entities who control the Bilderbergs, they control the Illuminatis, they control the churches. At least they control some major institutions that give commands down the line. For food production, military, you know what I'm saying? And food supplies, cars, fuel. But the minute they leave, who's going to give the order down the line from them? There'll be a certain time in space where it's going to be like a blank. What's going to happen then?
Who do you think will be controlled at that point? Who will take over, so to speak?
Well, it depends. If those Nephilim feel kind enough, you know, if they feel that they can escape and leave us in peace, and they have a good heart, they may appoint somebody to the care of things. But, that's not the end of it. If they do escape, what happens to us in the meantime with the approach of the Bureau and all the other storms? So we're screwed anyway.
Well,
it's not going to be too good.
No, it doesn't sound like it's going to be too good. So is that the final conclusion that you're making here is that however we look at this, we're screwed because of an incoming planet? Or is there any way out of this then? Can't we come out of this situation in some way? What do you think?
Well, to my calculation, there may be two ways out. One is if the same trick Moses allegedly performed 3,600 years ago, where a pyramid can be duplicated, maybe, or if the Anunnaki come in with the planet Nibiru, remember, those Anunnakis use our planet once to mine gold, okay? To mine gold. And they use the gold, supposedly, to help them form canopies around their cities or the planet, to protect their cities from the weather environment.
Yeah.
Now, you have to remember, those Anunnakis have 45 million years ahead of us in sciences. It's 45 million years of knowledge. Not 45 days or 450 years. 45 million years ahead of us. They must have a way, which I believe that they've already done it around their own planet. Because their own planet Nibiru is a crazy orbit. It goes very deep in space to very deep colds. It's super hyperspeed and survives. Nobody knows how. Nibiru. Maybe if their superiors are kind enough, like Enki and Enlil, And when they arrive here, or even earlier, they know what's going on. If they're kind enough, they may choose, I repeat, they may choose to form a barrier around our planet also, temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
Short time, just until we pass the stage of catastrophe. And I believe that's what happened. Now I'll go back to Operation High Jump. Do you remember I mentioned that there were three nuclear bombs on one of the ships that were never used?
Yeah, three of them, yeah, right.
Right. In 1958, we had an operation called Operation Argus. I believe it's spelled A-R-G-U-S. Where we sent a few battleships down south around Antarctica to reach Africa. And one ship was called the Norton Sea. I believe that was the name, I'm not sure. Norton Sound, I'm sorry. Norton Sound.
All right.
That ship was carried electronic equipment, but it also carried exactly, I'm going to say that, exactly three nuclear missiles to be used for atmospheric tests around Cape Horn of South Africa to test the atmosphere, Now, that test was supposed to perform on certain dates. However, now listen to this, how sneaky our government is in the Navy. However, that ship, Norton Sound, with a small fleet of 15 other ships called Task 88, the task force went around South Africa down to Antarctica, very sneaky-like.
Right.
Suddenly, there were three mysterious nuclear explosions down in Antarctica. Three. What they did, they secretly blew up the original three nuclear bombs that were left there by Operation High Jump.
Okay.
To masquerade. Now listen to this. They blew up those three nuclear bombs. They thought maybe it'll cause some damage to the Nazi base or the aliens. It did not. Because they already built canopies, protective canopies, invisible, around the whole area. And as a matter of fact, those Nephilim welcome, like I told you earlier, they welcome nuclear explosions. But they convert the energy in the air to matter, to fuel.
Okay.
And a week later, when the same ship went to South Africa and exploded the three bombs in space, nobody mentioned the first three explosions. You know why? But back in 1958, there was no television, no internet. Oh, yeah, there was a few radio stations, basically. The Russians didn't complain, the English didn't complain, and the French didn't complain. The reason why they didn't complain was they knew what's going on. Everything was hushed up. So you had six nuclear explosions. The first three that blew up the three bombs left over by Operation High Jump. And the second three explosions, three explosions in the atmosphere that was supposed to take place for the tests. And that's how they work.
Right. So if we kind of begin to like round up the whole story here that you've been painting for us. If we tie it back and talk about it in the context of the activity down in Antarctica, Operation High Jump, and so forth. Obviously, you know, has this resolved in any way in regards to the activity down in Antarctica? Is there still factions down there warring with each other, or has this hasn't panned out yet? Do you have any theories or ideas about that?
In 1959, I believe, President Eisenhower signed a world treaty. No weapons to be allowed beyond a certain point in either pole, the North Pole or the South Pole.
Okay.
No weapons. Because of the warning that Admiral Byrd got, we didn't get into that if it's time, that Admiral Byrd got from a meeting he had with the alien leader called the Master, or which I call actually Lucifer. He's the same entity.
Let's spend a few minutes on that, because that's an interesting one, and that is the recount as well that comes from Admiral Byrd's secret diary, which I haven't kind of talked about yet. But what we know from the diary is that he had a meeting down there. He met with a bunch of people, and what you're saying is you think that it was Lucifer he was meeting down there. Is that right?
Yeah. By the way, be very careful on the diary. Be very careful. The U.S. government is very sneaky. The diary had been modified.
Okay.
Very easily. They changed three words from South Pole to North Pole and Antarctic to Arctic. It's very easy.
Yeah.
When the U.S. government released it to the grandson of Admiral Byrd on the Art Bell show back in 1995,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was released by his grandson. A few weeks later, the mother, the grandson came saying, "Oh, no, we didn't, it's not really ours, we don't know, blah, 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 blah." It's real. Except be careful. U.S. government, again, is using every trick they can to distract you from the truth. If you change two words from diary, from north to south, and Arctic to Antarctic, it fits. You know why? Because Admiral Byrd was down on that day in Antarctica, in Operation High Jump. There are pictures showing him there next to the R-4D's plane and inside a plane. It's in my book.
Yes.
He was down in Antarctica, not in the North Pole. And besides, the North Pole, that time of year, it's pitch darkness. It's called the celestial winter. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right.
Those cameras, which he had on board, the super secret cameras, the Trimicron, whatever they're called, they have three lenses. They point straight down, a 45-degree angle, and one more for magnetic sensing. You need bright light for that.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot operate in the North Pole in the darkness. So all I can say to the people that modified the diary, which is the U.S. government, you didn't do your homework. It's that simple. Very simple.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the meeting and what probably happened there, the exchange, so to speak, that Byrd and some of the other people down there got out of this meeting, so to speak, with this being or this race of people down there.
Right. The meeting was fantastic. What happened, Admiral Byrd took off an RD-4, the DC-3, towards the last trip toward the supposedly secret mission. I believe, personally, that the master, the leader of the alien, subconsciously or subliminally, whatever the word is, gave Admiral Byrd a message or the okay to take off head toward the opening of the pole, South Pole. Admiral Byrd took off to his diary in his own handwriting, by the way, in his own handwriting. Everything was fine. They arrived there to the opening, then they were escorted by two UFOs, one and two on each side. They, by hidden force field, they landed in a beautiful area and took him to meet the leader called the Master. Now, one more thing happened here. On the way to the meeting, Admiral Byrd says that he saw a beautiful crystal city made of crystal.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important. You know why?
No, why?
It's very critical. Are you familiar with the theory of a person called Richard Hoagland?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Up at the moon. And the theory is correct. He claimed that a glass city is on the moon, and he proved it on his tapes as the light shines through the crystal, and the astronauts couldn't see it because of a certain golden coating on the helmet, but the cameras did see it because they didn't have the golden coating.
Right, right.
Now, we call them glass structures, and by looking at the tapes, I agree they exist. However, in the days of Admiral Byrd, when he saw those glass cities, he couldn't see glass. So he said crystal cities.
Yeah.
I believe they're the same. That's why I believe that the Anunnakis, that I believe also occupy the moon right now, are the same people as the Nephilim who occupy the inner Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The same group of people. It's a double approval.
Right.
Same structures. I mean, can't be any better than that. So what I'm saying, the master met Admiral Byrd inside. Now, the people that escorted Admiral Byrd from the landing place of his craft to the meeting place were, listen to this, we heard it before, tall blondes.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him before, we've seen him speak German accents and flying saucers. They're not Nazis. They are the Anunnaki. They're the same aliens or the descendants or the clones, one or the other.
Okay.
He met the master. They were very nice. He recognized Admiral Byrd is not a man of military background. He's a peaceful expeditionist. He spoke to him. He gave him some warnings about not to use atomic weapons, some bad days are coming, and so forth.
Mm.
Admiral Byrd left, and apparently the force field of the flying saucer dropped him off roughly 27 minutes before he landed. And he just flew the last 27 minutes on his own power, landed.
Right.
He didn't throw any equipment out of his plane. His plane was never in trouble. It's all part of the expression, bull. And ever since he landed, the U.S. government, like I said, is tight-lipped by the whole operation. Many admirals died through suicide or whatever, mysterious drownings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So
they have to keep this operation under lids.
Aaron here, do you think that the current governments are taking any precautions if they indeed have information about this? And again, we can tie this back to the idea of underground bases then, or some kind of activity where the different nations and so forth, organizations on the planet, human organizations, are have information about this and they're trying to escape the events in the best way they can, hiding underground and try to survive. Do you think that's the case as well?
Right now, the aliens and the human race, certain governments, they all know about it. They're working with each other. They have no choice. They have no choice. Just like the movie, The X-Files, because there are always some people who try to find solutions on their own and help. But the way things are going now, if any human would try to hide even deep underground, if that catastrophe is going to be as bad as I think it's going to be or may not be, nothing will help them. The only thing that can help us, the human race, like I said, if the planet can be deflected like in the old days, or the main planet Nibiru occupants, the Anunnaki, which are not in prison here, but the ones that are coming, would try to help us. But here's another problem. Somebody asked once the great Zakaria Sitkin if the Anunnaki look like us or not. He said, yes, they look just like us. But his wife, you know, she died a couple of years ago. Some newsman interviewed Sitkin's wife a couple of years ago. You know what she said?
No.
She said, if the world only knew what's coming, those terrible people on the planet, they're monstrous. They would be terrified.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe Zakaria Sitkin right now is a little bit backing off. He may be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that lately the U.S. government brought some, allegedly, I heard some false charges against him and maybe tried to blackmail him to keep his mouth shut, whatever.
Right.
Whatever.
Okay.
But his wife said it a few years ago. If you knew what's coming, those beings, you'd be terrified. So I can't really tell you what's going on. Either they're shapeshifters, one day they're Mr. Nice Guy, the other day they're a monster, who knows?
Right, right.
But all I can tell you is right now there are beings on the moon and on Mars. There are beings there. There cannot be no other than the original Anunnaki who left behind to guard this planet. Because no other race can interfere in this galaxy. They come and go, but they cannot interfere or form any abductions or anything. Only the Anunnaki.
All right. Well,
they are in charge.
Aaron, it's a fantastic story. Very hard to verify, obviously, but it's interesting to hear it. And I guess what we can say at this point is that if we live, we'll see what happens in 2012. Then, Aaron, right?
I sure hope it'll be around.
Exactly. Well, okay. Again, really interesting hearing about your work and some of the research that you've done. And why don't you again here for us, just let us know your website address so people can find out more about your work and so forth. And are you, just to round things up, are you continuing the work in some way, or what are you doing? Are you preparing in any way, or what's up next for you, so to speak? We're only, what is it now, 3 years away, 4 years to 2012 here.
Yeah, well, I'm continuing. I found some more facts which I may put in as a supplement to the book, maybe a little booklet, I'm not sure, which is very interesting. But if anybody wants to purchase my book or look at my website, it's really terrific. It's deepanalysisfrightingconclusion is one word, .com. Or just email my publisher, www.libris, it's xlibris.com, or by telephone, which is 888-795-4274.
Okay, thank you very much, Aaron, for your time. We're going to have links up, of course, on Radar's Creations, to websites and phone and so forth. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's been really interesting here from Aaron. Thank you again, Aaron. Take good care, okay?
And thank you very much for giving me a chance to be on the air.
That's our program with Aaron Kaplan on his analysis of the situation. Thank you for listening and for joining us here in the member section. We will be back soon with more radio. We have MEP Marta Andreasen, Andrew Basiago, Kevin P. Miller, and Lloyd Pye joining us soon. We have guest suggestions and topic suggestions forms available in our member section now as well. We want to hear from you. My thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth, and I want you to take good care, go easy, and don't forget to have some fun. Until next time, take good care, and we'll see you online. Bye-bye.